This is not a momentary blip. This is a real, and the use of the word watershed moment is very apt.
Himalaya's glaciers melting faster than thought. That's bad news for millions in Asia. It's Friday, February 15th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, press freedom's under attack. Australia eases up on asylum seekers. And bug appetit. It's all today on today's VOA Asia. The Australian government said this week that it would reopen a mothballed island detention camp in anticipation of a new wave of asylum seekers arriving by boat. This after Parliament passed legislation that would give sick asylum seekers easier access to mainland hospitals. Phil Mercer has the story.
Independent lawmakers, the Australian Greens and the opposition Labour Party, have joined forces to humiliate Australia's minority centre-right coalition government. The bill passed Tuesday in the House of Representatives by a single vote and was approved by the upper chamber, the Senate, on Wednesday. The legislation will give doctors a greater say on which refugees detained offshore can travel to Australia for medical treatment. Since 2013, Canberra has held asylum seekers arriving by boat in camps on the tiny Republic of Nauru and on Manus Island in Papua New Guinea in the South Pacific, and has insisted they would never be allowed to resettle in Australia. Doctors have said medical facilities on the islands are inadequate for about 1,000 asylum seekers and refugees who remain. The government had argued the new medical evacuation law would encourage more asylum seekers to try to reach Australia by sea, and that some would die during the voyage. Prime Minister Scott Morrison accused opposition politicians of weakening border security.
They are failing the test of duty to the Australian people, and they do it trying to kid themselves that this is being done in the name of humanitarianism. Well, I remind them that their humanitarianism, as supposed last time, led to child deaths. It led to the total destruction of our borders, and it took the strength again of a coalition government, Mr. Speaker. The people of Australia will remember this day and know that this is now on your head.
The Australian Navy has also, since 2013, been ordered to turn back migrant boats, a policy that critics say is illegal under international law. The government says its uncompromising policy has stopped a steady flow of migrant boats and saved lives at sea. Critics have argued Australia is turning its back on desperate people fleeing persecution. The passing of the legislation reopens old wounds in Australia's divisive debate about asylum seekers and immigration. It's an issue that will be prominent in the run-up to the next federal election, which is expected in May. Phil Mercer for VOA News. Sydney.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. U.S. and Chinese negotiators have begun 2 days of official trade talks in Beijing. Meanwhile, U.S. and Taliban officials are set to meet Monday in Pakistan for a new round of direct peace negotiations. Thailand's election commission is calling for the dissolution of a political party that nominated a member of the royal family as its candidate for prime minister. And nearly 100 people have died in northern India after drinking tainted bootleg liquor. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. And VOA Asia continues. A new report brings troubling news. Researchers believe that the Himalayas contain about 27% less glacial ice than previously thought. Now, we say troubling because melt runoff from the glaciers is a major source of water for large parts of Asia, including China and India. Christopher Scott is director of the Udall Center at the University of Arizona and was a co-author of the report.
The Himalayan region, given its high elevation, clearly as the roof of the world, but also Its important effect in catching monsoon precipitation, that is snowfall and rain in the lower elevations, is and the accumulation of ice that results from that is the third largest accumulation of ice outside of the two poles, the North Pole and the South Pole. So it's referred to as the third pole, and there are vast volumes of ice stored in Himalayan glacier and snow that is a phenomenon that melts more annually. The Himalayan region is the home or the source of water for 10 large river systems that cumulatively represent a downstream population of 2 billion people. We're talking particularly about the Ganges with 580 million people, the Yangtze with 605 million people. Together there, you've got close to 1.3 million people.
So there is a new study out that suggests that there might be around 27% less glacial ice in the Himalayas than was previously estimated. 27% sounds like a fairly large number, but what do you think that that, if in fact it bears out, what would that mean for regions in Asia?
Yeah, the study that you're referring to is called the Himalayan, Hindu Kush Himalaya Monitoring and Assessment Program, or HIMAP, that was a collaborative effort led by the International Center for Integrated Mountain Development, or ISIMOD, based in Kathmandu, Nepal. Many of us participated in the process. I was the coordinating lead author together with two colleagues for the Water Resources Chapter. The actual impact on glacial volumes and glacial melt that you talked about was another chapter that, of course, is central to the way we did our analysis, but that showed that very significant volumes of ice stored in the high mountain Himalayan third pole region that I referred to are undergoing rapid melt processes. And so both changes in estimates of the amount of ice stored, but also the future projection of very dramatic melting.
Is there any sense among researchers such as yourself that this process may be a momentary, you know, blip, or is it part of a larger pattern, do you think? Because, you know, we keep, not to mix things up here, but we keep hearing stories about much more rapid ice, glacial ice melting in, say, Greenland or Antarctica than had previously been calculated.
This is not a momentary blip. This is a real, and the use of the word watershed moment is very apt here. Watershed moment in that sense being it's a real threshold. It's a crossing point. We're into a new operating reality. We're into a new climate regime, and that is with global warming having a pronounced effect at higher elevations. In other words, higher elevations in the Himalayas are warming on a year-by-year basis more quickly than lowland regions, and this has a pronounced impact on ice melt. The reason it's not a momentary blip is once the vast volumes of glacier ice are significantly melted, there is less future ice stored for melting, which means we will have significantly less water in the river system, and including with the timing that I referred to earlier, which is your first question, than we had in the past.
Professor Christopher Scott of the University of Arizona. Happening now in Asia, stock markets across the region closed mixed on Thursday. The Shanghai Composite Index finished 0.01% lower, despite stronger than expected Chinese trade data. The Hang Seng Index lost 0.2%. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. An award-winning Philippine journalist and founder of an online news site that has clashed repeatedly with President Rodrigo Duterte was arrested Wednesday by government agents on libel charges. Maria Ressa, executive editor of Rappler Incorporated, was arrested following a complaint from a businessman linked to murder and trafficking humans and drugs. Ressa's arrest stems from a 2012 report about the businessman's alleged ties to a judge who is on the nation's highest court. She denounced the arrest after she was released later this week on bail.
This isn't just about me, and it's not just about Rappler. The message that the government is sending is very clear, and someone actually told our reporter this last night. Be silent, or you're next.
The National Union of Journalists of the Philippines condemned Ress's arrest as a, quote, shameless act of persecution by a bully government. Meanwhile, in the United States, accusations of extortion and blackmail made by the world's richest man against a national gossip newspaper may have reached the legal limits of broad press freedoms protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. VOA's Brian Padden has this look.
Jeff Bezos, who owns both the Amazon online shopping site and the Washington Post, has accused the publishers of the National Enquirer newspaper's parent company, America Media Inc., of attempted blackmail. Bezos claims they threatened to make public intimate nude photos of him and his girlfriend unless he halted an investigation to find out how the National Enquirer obtained his private text messages that were published in a story alleging he had an extramarital affair with former news anchor Lauren Sanchez before announcing his divorce from his wife of 25 years. AMI maintains it acted lawfully in its reporting.
It absolutely is not extortion and not blackmail.
Bezos also suggested he may have been targeted by the National Enquirer in retaliation for his Washington Post newspaper's critical coverage of President Donald Trump and Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's alleged involvement in the killing of Saudi dissident and Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. David Pecker, the owner of the Enquirer, is a longtime friend of President Trump and also has reported ties to Saudi Arabia's leaders. The National Enquirer's salacious reporting on Bezos' alleged affair, even if done for overtly partisan reasons, would likely be protected under the First Amendment.
You have to separate out the sleaze here from the principle I think we're trying to protect, which is journalists have a right to publish what they know.
However, the media conglomerate head could be in legal jeopardy if Bezos' blackmail allegations can be proven.
And I don't quite understand why AMI and its lawyers engaged in activity that potentially violates federal extortion laws and state criminal laws involving coercion.
Pecker admitted prior to the 2016 election, he paid off an ex-model to keep silent about her alleged affair with Trump. The National Enquirer avoided prosecution by cooperating with a federal investigation into campaign finance violations. Involvement in a subsequent crime could violate this previous deal. The Amazon founder, who is reportedly worth $163 billion, said he would spare no expense to investigate the gossip newspaper's misdeeds and political connections. Brian Padden, VOA News, Washington.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
This news alert from VOA Asia, IndiGo, an Indian budget airline, is canceling dozens of flights every day over the next 2 months as it struggles to find enough skilled pilots. This following an aggressive expansion binge, according to people with direct knowledge of the matter. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. Less than 2 months after being named acting U.S. Defense Secretary, Pat Shanahan made his first overseas trip this week, focusing on the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the details.
A second stop this week in an American military hotspot. Tuesday, Acting Defense Secretary Pat Shanahan toured Iraq, where the United States has deployed more than 5,000 troops.
I wanted to hear firsthand from them about concerns, the political dynamics that they're facing.
Monday, it was Afghanistan, where 14,000 U.S. forces are training Afghans and battling more than a dozen terror groups. Experts say the acting U.S. Defense Secretary needs to grow his foreign policy muscle after coming to the job with no military experience and only 18 months in government service.
The stuff that you really do look for your secretary to make decisions on in many ways, how to manage the bureaucracy to get things done, how to foresee national security issues two steps down the road. There, I wish there was someone who had a little bit more experience and interaction with foreign leaders before taking the position.
The U.S.-led coalition helped Iraqis push the Islamic State terror group out of Iraq, but American troops remain in the country to train, advise, and strengthen local security forces. U.S. forces in Iraq also have targeted remnants of Islamic State in Syria, and U.S. President Donald Trump has suggested they could stay there to keep a close watch on Iran. Acting Defense Secretary Shanahan heads next to NATO, where he will try to reassure partners worried about U.S. commitment to the alliance following harsh criticism by the American president. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
This news alert from VOA Asia: the trade and investment agreement between the EU and Singapore received approval of the European Parliament today. The Parliament also gave a green light to the partnership and cooperation agreement. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a huge shipping container in the suburbs of Denver, Colorado, is the home of some of the nation's smallest livestock. Rocky Mountain Micro Ranch is Colorado's first and only edible insect farm, and one of the fewer than three dozen companies in the U.S. growing insects as human food or animal feed. Shelley Schlender has that story.
A metal latch creaks as Wendy Lou McGill opens a shipping container in a Denver, Colorado suburb. She steps into a boxcar-sized room that's lined with shelves of shallow white bins. Whirring machines keep the temperature around 26 degrees Celsius at 80% humidity. That's just right for McGill's tiny livestock, mealworms.
Rocky Mountain Micro Ranch is Colorado's first and only edible insect farm. We raise crickets and mealworms to sell to restaurants and food manufacturers.
Feeding the world's appetite for protein through beef and even chicken is unsustainable, according to the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization. Protein from bugs is more doable. McGill grows nearly 275 kilos of insects every month, feeding them beer mash and grain. A carrot supplies their water needs. Each mealworm is about half the size of your pinky. Thousands of them curl and wriggle in each shallow bin.
I want to be part of trying to figure out how to feed ourselves better as we have less land and water and a hotter planet and more people to feed.
Visiting the micro ranch today are Terry Kohling and his grandchildren.
What's that? The bugs, the water bugs.
Andrew is almost five and Zora is nearly three. Like most Americans, they have never, ever eaten a bug and don't really want to.
I don't think they are very appealing as far as something you put in your mouth. And you see them around dead things, and it just doesn't appeal to me to eat something that seems to be so wild.
But another visitor is already a fan of using grubs for a grub.
I'm Amy Franklin, and I'm founder of a nonprofit called Farms for Orphans. And what we do is farm bugs for food, because in other countries where we work, they're really, really popular food.
Andrew and Zora are still unsure. To get them a little more used to the idea of insect protein, McGill brings out a small bowl filled with mealworms that have been baked until crisp, then sprinkled with salt.
Can I just taste one?
Yeah, one, totally. It's really crispy and salty.
Tastes kind of crunchy and kind of yummy.
Bugs also taste yummy at Linger, a Denver restaurant where saucepans sizzle as Chef Sean Bruno prepares gourmet grubs.
We do black ants and sesame seeds with crickets mixed in with the green tea soba noodles, and then we garnish with chapaline crickets.
Culinary director Jeremy Kittleson says Linger is committed to changing the American palate.
As much as we love beef, there's no scientist, there's no environmentalist that's going to tell you cattle farming is a sustainable practice. We should eat more insects.
As his grandchildren watch, skeptically, Kohling samples the cricket soba noodle dish. With a surprised look of delight, he says he even likes the crickets.
Kind of like a hard raisin. The seasoning's great.
Amy Franklin gives a toast with a forkful of noodles and crickets.
Cricket? Bug appetit?
Over 2 billion people worldwide eat insects. Slowly, Americans are adding to that number. Shelley Schlender for VOA News, Denver, Colorado.
Finally today, when Sarah Dwyer left a lucrative job in banking to spend a year in France, she had no idea it would give her an opportunity to fulfill a childhood passion. Almost 10 years later, the American entrepreneur has never been happier and is spreading that joy to her customers and workers alike with chocolate. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
And this is what we use to make our famous chocolate-covered caramels.
Sarah Dwyer has always loved chocolate, especially caramels.
When I was little, I used to like to squish them all in the box to find the chocolate-covered caramels. So I started a company that only makes chocolate-covered caramels.
That company is Chouquette, where almost 10 years in, Dwyer and her team are still making small batches of handcrafted caramels for a growing clientele. The idea for realizing her childhood passion came in 2009 during a year-long visit to France, where she decided to enroll at the Cordon Bleu Culinary School in Paris.
Once I started making everything in the pastry area, from a croissant to a chouquette, I loved it. And what I realized was that no one was making chocolate-covered caramels the way I loved them in the United States.
Dwyer uses quality chocolate from a California supplier, natural cane sugar, vanilla beans from Madagascar, and butter and sea salt from France.
All of those ingredients go in to making the best chocolates.
Her caramels come in 16 different flavors, each with their own design, and can be customized. She sells them online and in about 200 stores throughout the U.S. One of her most popular lines reflects iconic images of Washington, where she's based.
We took the five monuments that I love best in D.C. and made chocolates with those designs on top.
Another popular product is a series inspired by powerful American women called Phenomenal Women.
Everyone loves Oprah, so we said inspire by Oprah. We say win like Serena. We say go high like Michelle. Rule like Ruth.
Ruth, as in U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
The Rule Like Ruth set outsold every single holiday design.
But perhaps the sweetest and most satisfying part of her business is her staff, about half of whom have a range of neurological issues.
They're the best employees I've ever had. It is absolutely not a charity. It is the best business decision I ever made.
I think it's a great experience. Everyone here is very open, very nice.
It makes me feel good. I don't have to dread coming to work like I might somewhere else. It took me a few different jobs to land here. And I don't know, I just really like it here.
Dwyer's clients range from upscale hotels and major airlines to county fairs and local food markets. But no matter who she's making her signature chocolates for, Dwyer says she can't imagine doing anything else.
We're chocolate, we're caramel, and we're designs, but when you put them all together, it makes something magic.
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Gaithersburg, Maryland.
I'll take one of each. Well, that's our program for today and for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate it. And we'll be back again with you next week. We hope you'll join us then as well. Till then, have a great weekend.